Our next speaker is Helen Troup. She was appointed Managing Director of CommInsure in 2014. Helen has more than 20 years of experience in the Australian and New Zealand financial services industries. Prior to CommInsure, she was Head of Life and Health Australia and New Zealand for Swiss Re. From 2008 to 2011, Helen was CEO at ING New Zealand, covering funds management, asset management, property management, as well as the insurance business. Before that, Helen held a number of senior roles at ING Australia, which is now incidentally known as OnePath Australia. Included among her roles there was Executive Director, Life Risk and Head of Risk Insurance Markets. Please welcome to the stage Helen Troup.
Yes, CommInsure. Now today, in this short time I've got with you, I'm probably not going to spend too much time on CommInsure, but I do think I might be uniquely placed to share some stories about how media, customer expectations can impact not only my company, but that of the industry. And so I think that's part of the context of why Andrew was brave enough to ask whether I would come and speak today. And I thought I would do it a little bit differently. I thought I would just share three customer stories. Three customer stories that changed the way that I think. Some from a few years ago and some more recently. So hopefully this perspective will challenge you to think, how do I approach my day-to-day job? What is fair? How do we manage this increasing imbalance between consumer expectations and what we deliver as an industry? So my first story. Nearly 10 years ago, there was this thing called the GFC. Anyone remember it? As Emma said, I was the CEO of ING in New Zealand at the time. In fact, I moved over in 2008. The GFC actually hit New Zealand a little bit earlier because of their financial companies, the finance companies there. A lot of Kiwis had invested all of their money and were living off the dividends from those companies, and they started collapsing in 2007. I arrived in 2008, number one fund manager. Our biggest fund, anyone heard of a CDO? $800 million. Of Kiwi money in this one fund. The leading fund had won awards for the last 5 years. When I arrived, the fund had been frozen. So in essence, it had stayed at a dollar per unit for 5 years, putting off dividends or returns to shareholders. In June, the share price had dropped to 71 cents and it was frozen. By October, 16 cents. The average age of the investors was 67. Fun. The brochure, prospectus as they're called in New Zealand, had clearly communicated to customers there was risk involved in investment. You as professionals appreciate that, yes? There is risk in any investment you make. This fund was pitched as low to medium risk. Intellectually, a lot of the people I was working with said the GFC is a once-in-a-lifetime event. How can we be blamed for that? Our organisation had some challenges. ING was partly owned by ANZ. We had customers picketing the ANZ branch. Now, granted, they brought cakes for the people that worked in the branch because they loved them, but they weren't very comfortable with the position we were taking. How can we help them? The average age of 67, they lived off that income. And in the context of all the other funds collapsing, it was causing significant financial distress. I went on the road to talk to these investors with an offer that we made to these customers. I want you to think about a room bigger than this. It was a basketball court. Anyone from New Zealand? Do you know where Invercargill is? Yeah, right down the bottom. There we go. We've got some Kiwis there. We booked this basketball and we thought we might get 30 to 50 investors. We had 350 investors show up. literally sitting on a stage like this, watching them come in with their walking sticks, their Zimmer frames, their children with them supporting them. 2 minutes before I went on stage, I went to the bathroom. A lady came in, caught me as I was walking out and said, "You killed my dad." The stress of the financial situation gave him a heart attack. I can tell you, I did that 15 times around New Zealand and it changed the way that I think about our products. It changes the way that you interact with a customer. So a lot of people say they have customers at the heart of their thinking. You go through an experience like that, it comes out your pores. And it's one example of how I now think differently about how I design products, how we market products, and how we have a responsibility when those circumstances come. I want to change gears now. General insurance. Claim came across my desk. Lots of destruction inside the property. 2 rooms had been set on fire, done by the occupant. Now, all of you are very professional, and you would appreciate you wouldn't pay that claim, right? The owner-occupier, I was going to say self-inflicted, got to move to life insurance, but they did arson in their own house, so you wouldn't pay the claim, right? Anyone here that would pay that claim? A few weeks later, it became apparent that there were some serious problems in that household. It was domestic violence. The husband was convicted, put in jail for 6 months. The wife was left with the 2 children with an insurance company that wouldn't pay out. Is that fair? So with that extra information, now hopefully you've got the, we'll try the polling thing as well. The policy says do not pay, so hopefully you can find a question from, is it under my name? Would you pay that claim? Domestic violence, husband destroyed the house, wife left with 2 children. Can you see it on, can someone tell me if you can see it on your phones? Yep, yep. See, even in this room, the diversity of opinion on what you would do in those circumstances is broad, from paying out the full amount to paying ex gratia. And this is one of the challenges from an insurance industry when we think about general insurance contracts. You've got policies that are joint owned. People can't change their policy because they're together. There's a whole range of complexity here for vulnerable customers. How do we bring in the customer perspective and how do we find out? Because that lady was not going to tell us. It was only through the branch network that we got to find out. And how is that fair? How many other customers has this happened to? That, according to that survey, nearly over majority of you would pay out that claim. How as we as an industry respond to that? My third example, a life insurance claim. Now, not a lot of these products are sold anymore, but the good old accidental death. Right? So we only pay out if it's an injury. I think the definition goes along the lines of external, violent, visible, something like that. Claim comes across my desk. This young mother of 2 had died from an overdose of a painkiller. Would you pay that claim? Accidental death? The coroner's certificate went on to say that she died from mixed toxicity, accidental overdose. Would you pay that claim? Policy has a suicide exclusion. One of the challenges in the life insurance industry at the moment is coroners now don't actually say whether it was suicide or not. They actually say, what did you die of? And she died of toxicity, not the method. What is my claims manager supposed to do with that assessment? We talk about community expectations. We talk about how do we put that through, and we talk about values leadership across our organisations. We're asking people to make these decisions every day. As it turns out, the story gets a little bit worse. It was not our finest hour. I got to listen to a call from the claims manager to this particular, the father of the lady. And we'd sent out a decline letter saying, due to it being suicide, it was not eligible. He spent 20 minutes trying to explain. The coroner never said it was suicide. He said it was accidental. He had worked, the inquest had been closed, and he was personally hurt that Commonshaw had made the decision or decided that it was suicide, even though there was no evidence. It was not our finest hour. That call is one of those calls that we now use with all staff to listen to say, you thought you were saying the right thing, but you missed the impact you were having on the father who was taking responsibility for his daughter who was living with him, and it was his drugs that she took. Now, I spoke to that father for 20 minutes and I got to learn a lot more about the circumstances of her life, her kids, etc. And he, at the end of the call, says, I know the policy doesn't activate this way, but what would you do? I did this in front of, and I can see one of my staff members actually in the crowd. We used this as a discussion point. And one of the things that you notice I haven't told you is the sum insured with any of them. But what was one of the first questions the actuaries in the room asked me? How much is it, Helen? I said, I'm not going to tell you. Because it shouldn't matter whether it's $1 million or $20,000. Equity and fairness shouldn't be about the sum insured. As the discussion unfolded, a group of cluster of actuaries actually started talking about, well, we should pay something, we'll get her income and we'll do a present value and we'll do this and we'll do that. But these are the things that we and our staff and our businesses all have to think about. It's about thinking differently and asking more questions. So through these three stories, I wanted to bring the customer into the room. I'm no means am I suggesting that we pay based on emotion. I'm not suggesting that our whole industry comes down on how we feel or how that emotion is. But what we need to do, and Jeff said it earlier, consumer expectations are changing. What is fair in those three cases? So I hope those three stories have challenged your thinking. I know they challenged mine, and they continually make me look at the way we approach our businesses going forward. I look forward to answering any questions you might have later.